Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on where you are tuning in from. Thank you. My name is Darcy Butkins, otherwise known as Inspector Bark. I reside here in Georgia. I'm a licensed private investigator here in the state of Georgia, as well as in the state of Florida. And I own my own detective agency here in the state of Georgia called Inspector Bark. Sniff out the best and the worst in canine care. Today, we are going to be speaking about pulling back the curtain on imposters within the animal welfare community. I always like to talk a little bit about the first 5 or 7 minutes, an opening monologue, and discuss what this whole podcast, which is a full 2 hours, which is being recorded, all about. And it is about pulling back the curtain on imposters. And we're seeing more and more of this. And we're going to bring on my guest panel today from all parts of the country discussing this. But I always like to give a episode description, which also goes in the body of an email. I like to send out a blanket email the Friday before the podcast, that Monday and Wednesday morning of. If you wish to unsubscribe, all you have to do is return it back in the subject heading, unsubscribe. So basically, what we have here today is episode 58, season 2. On this podcast, we'll do a deep dive into who really is behind the curtain, impersonating those who are to help the animals and provide the animals a safe haven. But who are they really? Are these so-called rescues and shelters putting the needs of the animals first and foremost? Do they truly care about the welfare of the dogs and cats? In this episode, we are going to speak with whistleblowers and true animal advocates that believe otherwise. On a weekly basis, I am seeing with my own eyes how the animal welfare industry is in turmoil. I'm not talking about the companies that provide the necessities for our pets to thrive, the food industry, the pharmaceuticals needed to treat our pets, nor the other companies that are truly in it for our four-legged loved ones, but those that are supposed to protect the animals. The amount of animal neglect, abuse, and cruelty charges we are seeing among these rogue rescues is downright frightening. The question I have is, who are these people that portray themselves as rescuers? What type of background do they come from? Oftentimes, whistleblowers come to me and share their stories on how the quote-unquote rescue they are fostering denies them the proper care for a dog or cat in need of medical attention. As donations increase with the fundraiser meant for that animal, why is the foster being denied taking the animal to a vet? Oftentimes, the rogue rescue will state they have no money. The question people need to ask is, where is the money that is raised for that particular dog or cat really going? Join my guest and I on what imposters we will be pulling the curtain back on. So the first guest who will be speaking is Mr. Scott Fine, and Scott is the founder of Joey's Legacy Vet Mail Victims. And all these pages I'm going to be giving to you are Facebook pages. Scott will come on and talk about Joey. Joey was a dog. I think his 6-year anniversary of his death is coming up. That died upon the hands of a veterinarian in Florida. Scott will tell you a little bit about that story. It's a private page that you go to. In order to join, please answer the questions. And he's going to be discussing today, Scott and his team, what they're doing to expose bad veterinarian practices. Julia Sharp, located in Kentucky, is a true animal advocate and a whistleblower in the state of Kentucky. Julia also is the main administrator that runs Facebook page Stop the Trixie Foundation, also known as the Gulag. Stop the Trixie Foundation. I encourage you all to please go onto these pages, like them, and support them. Gina Pitt, will be my next guest. She's calling in. She runs a page along with her team, Guard Dog USA, exposing pet flippers, bad rescues, abusers, breeders, etc. So we've got a lot to go over. We literally have 2 hours, and believe it or not, it goes very, very fast. I will probably, let's go ahead and bring Scotty in, and then because Julia is going to have to leave a little bit earlier, we will go ahead and bring Scott in at this time. Good morning, good afternoon, Mr. Scott. How are you?
Good morning, Darcy. Afternoon, yes. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much. I'm well. I wanted to bring you on as I like to as my first guest. I like for you to, again, tell the audience how you came about creating Joey's Legacy and where you are today, where you were 5 years ago.
So this goes back to the summer of 2017 when Joey was brought to his vet. Unfortunately, his regular vet was not there that morning, so there was a substitute vet with over 40 years experience as a veterinarian who didn't have the common sense to run lab tests and try to diagnose what was going on with Joey. He decided to give Joey an injection of a drug that turned out to be contraindicated for Joey's condition, which we found out the next morning through lab tests conducted by his regular vet to be, he was in renal failure. Had those labs been done the day before, the diagnosis would have been realized and renal-friendly drugs could have been given. And at a bare minimum, Joey would have survived that veterinary experience. He was 12 at the time, and we decided to take our tragedy, losing our family member, and decided we wanted to help people. So we started a 501c3 nonprofit called Joey's Legacy. You mentioned the Facebook page, Joey's Legacy Vet Malvictims. We have a website, joeyslegacy.org, and we have helped in the area of about 2,000 people that have come to us with allegations of veterinary negligence or malpractice. People have either lost their companion animals, they've suffered permanent injury, and what we do is we have a team of 10 veterinarians who are above and beyond the call of duty. They'll review records and call out their negligent colleagues when appropriate, and they'll create opinion letters which go to our attorneys around the country, and legal options are explained to the pet owners, and then from that point on they seek the justice that they deserve.
What type of dog was Joey? There's always going to be like a 2 or 3 second delay. What type of dog was Joey?
So Joey was a dachshund. On the website, you can see his pictures. And we also have a page on that joeyslegacy.org website. We call it Celebration of Life. Contains other victims of veterinary malpractice. And we're very proud of that page because we want to highlight the fact that this is a real problem. Majority of vets are obviously very caring, compassionate individuals. They have a profound love for animals, and they do their best to provide quality treatment. We applaud them, and we're very grateful for them. We deal with the other group, the minority, who are either incompetent, reckless, sloppy in their work, leading to tragic outcomes. About half of the cases we see include deception, dishonesty in terms of falsifying medical records to cover negligence, and that's actionable in court. And so our attorneys are very aggressive when there's fraud involved, and we are able to, in many cases, recover three times the value of the veterinary costs that were paid to the vet when there's fraud involved. I do have some very good news this week from the great state of Tennessee. We have a court case currently in progress involving veterinary malpractice. The owner of the pet sought mental health counseling as a result of the loss of his pet. And typically, non-economic damages such as pain and suffering, loss of companionship, and emotional distress are not compensable in a court of law. However, the costs for the mental health counselor that the owner incurred, the judge in the case did rule that he's entitled to recover those costs, which is a huge, huge step forward in
Absolutely.
The recognition of animals as sentient creatures. Yeah. So we're very excited about that. It is one case in Tennessee. We're hoping it turns into a precedent-setting case, certainly in the state of Tennessee, and hopefully throughout the country. And you know, we're making progress very slowly, but we're moving in the right direction. And we hope to eventually change the landscape of veterinary justice to recognize the value of our family members.
Scott, yesterday I spoke to a woman who lives in Sarasota, originally from New York City. The call came to me from a New York true animal advocate, more on the side of activists, okay? So, you know, I always say there's activists, there's advocates, and there's animal lovers, and I consider myself an animal advocate. This person, the true animal activist up in New York, was concerned that this maybe was a fake voicemail by me. I said, the woman sounds legit. Reach out to her. The woman stated she suspected a puppy mill operation. I spent over an hour talking to this lovely woman. I then guided her to you. You spoke to this woman without naming names regarding the puppy that she had for 5 days and died of parvo.
Yes, I did.
Okay, can you give the listeners a little bit of a background of what transpired? And again, this is linked, in my opinion, Scott, to the veterinarian clinic, because remember, if she didn't tell you this, the woman, that according to this dog flipper, which is what they are, dog broker, they said you are only allowed to take the puppy to this particular vet. Okay, so go ahead and expand on that.
Well, you know, the way she described it, it sounded like the broker had some liability, especially if the broker knew that the puppy was that the puppy was ill. I suggested that she get the records. We could do the review, and she could take it to one of our attorneys for potential legal action. I think the veterinarian has some liability as well, and so we'll just have to see what happens.
She was very upset. She was very distraught. The puppy was exhibiting the symptoms of parvo, had seen the vet the day before, had to bring the dog back in, and was informed that the puppy had passed. Being from New York, as she stated, and being Italian, she was very angry at this vet and very upset, visibly shaken with her husband, and the vet stood there and said, "What are you so angry about?" No emotion, nothing. So what I wanted this woman is, Gina Pitt will be coming on from Guard Dog, and she's very well versed on USDA, but this woman is really, really putting all the pieces of the puzzle together and had determined that these puppies came from a puppy mill, I believe, in Ohio. So now we are crossing state lines, and we've got a whole shipment, I don't know how many puppies. People were standing in line, according to this woman, with her husband waiting to get their puppy. Only one family could go into the foyer of this industrial place. They could hear barking in the beyond, one family only. And she stood there and she looked around and saw little children waiting to get their puppy, happy faces. And when she walked away and realized her puppy was dying, she thought of those poor little children. And we see this over and over again. And what bothers me is, how do these people look in the mirror knowing they're using the backs of these innocent dogs and puppies to scam the innocent public? Hold on. I'm going to bring in Julia. She is on, and she's limited time today. So let's bring Julia in. Scott, hold that thought.
Okay.
Julia, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dorothy. You want to know how they can do that? They don't see those puppies. They see the money. That's all they see. They have no soul.
You're right. No, you're absolutely right, Julia.
That breaks my heart. That just breaks my heart that those kids are standing there waiting for puppies. Oh, my God.
And that is what this woman sat and talked to me for an hour yesterday, sent me what she wants to post as reviews. And when you go on to this one particular website for the one down here, and they're working together, okay, there's a team up north and this one. Their websites are pretty identical. You go and look at the reviews, there are like 4.9 out of 5. And I'm sorry, it seems to me that these are all fake rescues, fake reviews to make themselves look good. And these people have no morals. I used to say their moral compass is upside down. Now I say it doesn't even exist.
No, it doesn't exist. I am convinced that monsters exist in this world, and they're all human. You know, I don't know. We're just seeing so many awful things lately. The lies, the deception, the scamming, the hoarding, the apathy. It's just very frustrating.
What I like to piggyback on that, and we'll get back to Scott, because I know, Julie, you probably have a question for Scott or two. You mentioned that, lack of empathy. I also say emotionally detached, completely removed, and totally desensitized. And then when you call them out, what I see on Facebook, I see they distract, they want to derail off the subject, they want to discredit. They never take responsibility, and they never hold themselves accountable.
Oh, never. Never. You know, the hoarder I deal with still proclaiming what a wonderful person he is, you know, and that he never did anything wrong. You know, Randy Skaggs is a monster. We know what Randy Skaggs did. We didn't pull a single healthy animal out of that place. But he still posts on his Facebook all the time that he had beautiful, healthy, happy animals.
So that's in Elliott County, Kentucky. And Julia runs the page, as you heard, Stop the Trixie Foundation. Let me go back to Scott. Scott, I find, that when you are not a reputable rescue or a reputable shelter, you align yourselves with those veterinarians that possibly turn a blind eye, a deaf ear. They don't want to know. They're making money. And this was a warning sign to me yesterday when that woman, who I won't mention her name, said in the contract you could only take your puppy to this vet. Now, that's Sarasota, Scotty, okay? You know Sarasota. I know Sarasota. It's busy. There's plenty of veterinarians. So this upsets me, and why I wanted her to speak to you is that I'd like for you, and you probably have already, is to just put this particular two names of these veterinarians and the name of the clinic in your database and watch. Something will happen. And she's working diligently, this older woman, and I applaud her. But she's not the only one out there. We've got a lot of bad apples that are posing themselves as veterinarians. Let's not forget the one in Aventura, Florida, a couple of years back. He uprooted from Las Vegas, Nevada, came all the way down to Aventura, which is North Miami. Guess what he got busted on? Do you remember? I'll tell you.
Yeah.
What?
Beyond animal cruelty.
Mm-hmm. Bestiality and child porn. Bestiality and child porn. And he is in prison, okay? This is what we have walking among us. Yes, 22 years, Scott. Thank you for that. So go ahead, Scott. I want you to have a little bit more of the platform because I know Julia's got to bail out of here in about 20 minutes. Tell us what, going back to, let's say, 2 years ago to now where you are today, you've come a long way, my friend. And in your private group, you have over 4,200 members, which I hate to see because of what's going on, but they're coming together. And I always say, power in numbers. And you, it's a support group for one another. And it's beautiful to see. Very sad to hear, very sad to read. But we have to help and support one another, Scott. So I applaud you and I applaud your team. So just go ahead and give us a little bit more update on where you are from 2 years ago, 3 years ago, to now.
Well, you know, keep in mind that out of the 4,200 members of the group, probably less than 10% have been victims of veterinary malpractice. Majority of people have just joined the group to find out what it's all about. They will probably never have a bad experience with a veterinarian. And they've learned quite a bit by being part of this group. In my group, I have been offering some of our vet opinion letters that have been written, but in a redacted form, obviously, no identifying information. But the information that remains is very helpful, and it can certainly save a life potentially. At a minimum, it could help people manage their future visits with their own veterinarians by learning what happened in other cases and hopefully avoiding things like dangerous and deadly drug combinations that have been given by veterinarians to their patients. Many of them not even being aware that the combination of drug A and drug B can cause seizures, cardiac arrest, et cetera. So it's absolutely educational. We're very proud of providing that education to the members of our group. We've also seen a lot of small claims judges being willing to award more economic damages in court beyond just the recovery of all the veterinary costs that the owner paid and the sum of money that will be required to bring in another same-breed animal into the home. We're now seeing compensation for cost of cremation, cost of necropsy. I've heard of a few judges actually refunding the cost of our veterinarian's letter. The aforementioned damage award for cost of mental health counseling. And when it comes to economic damages, judges seem to be easing up and awarding more and more. The problem continues to be non-economic damages, like, as I mentioned, damages for emotional distress and pain and suffering, that kind of thing. Still a problem, even in small claims court, circuit court, or civil court. It's almost unheard of. So, yes, we've made a lot of progress. We hope to continue to make a lot of progress. We are working on a project that's going to dramatically heighten the awareness of the existence of veterinary malpractice. We've been in contact with several shopping malls around the country, and they, we're talking to them about doing some stand advertising, in other words, that large 3x4 foot poster, whatever it is, in the middle of the mall in a stand. Do you suspect veterinary malpractice? Contact Joey's Legacy. And, of course, you know, the number of people that visit malls every day. We think that's a very cost-effective way to get the word out. And, back in Florida, way back when I was a kid, there was a retailer. The owner was, his name was Cy Sims, the Sims clothing outlet. Maybe some of you in the Dade County, Broward County area might remember him. His favorite saying was, an educated consumer is our best customer, and that applies perfectly here. An educated Joey's member is our best customer, so to speak. We feel we can save a lot of lives with the education we're providing to people.
I remember him, and his wife's name was Marcy Sims.
Yes, Marcy, yes.
Uh-huh. So, Scott, I'm going to put you on hold. I want you to stay on the line. I want you to mute yourself because I really only have 10 minutes left with Julia because she's got to get a dog to the vet. Actually, I have 15 minutes. I'm going to take every 15 minutes. But I want you to stay on. Scott, just mute yourself. Okay. I might be getting another call on your behalf, Scotty. So what I want to do is I'm going to just shift gears here just because, you know, she is got to leave here. Julia, you know, you and I have talked about this whole no-kill phenomenon, which in my opinion I think is a myth. Every month, twice a month.
It is a myth.
Okay. Twice a month I get an email, okay? And the report showing how no-kill policies are harming our animals. And this is just in April of this year, 1 month of this year, okay? Just bear with me. Cedar Creek Township, Michigan. A couple was being investigated for allegedly running an illegal animal shelter resulting in the removal of more than 40 animals from the residence. Weld County, Colorado. Authorities have removed 95 dogs from a hoarder's home. The Colorado Department of Agriculture reportedly issued a cease and desist order for the owner of the house for operating an animal shelter or sanctuary at the house without a valid license. An investigation was ongoing, no additional information. Austin, Texas. A public self-professed no-kill animal shelter doing business as Austin Animal Center, AAC, had been full in turning away animals for months. This is what they're doing, people, and it's happening across the United States. These so-called shelters are turning away the animals. Let me tell you this quote. This is very interesting. According to the report, in January, a resident had picked up an abandoned dog and transported the animal to AAC, where she was told that the facility was full. She said that she was escorted to her car by a security officer after being given an appointment to return a month later. Quote, I was treated like a criminal, and I was just trying to help, she says. Wiping away tears and feeling helpless, the resident reluctantly took the 50-pound dog back to her one-bedroom apartment, joining many concerned residents who have found themselves in similar situations. She reportedly eventually found a new home for the animal, but I'm not even going to list, but I'm going to tell you just what other counties in the month of April. Marion County, South Carolina. Forsyth County, North Carolina, Las Vegas, Nevada, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Columbus, Ohio, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, Golden Valley, Minnesota, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Midland, Texas, Muskogee, Oklahoma, Bay City, Michigan, Lepine, Oregon, Richland Center, Wisconsin, Sugar Land, Texas, La Mesa, California. Can I go on and on? There's more. There's one in Kentucky. Paintsville, Kentucky.
The sad thing is, every single one of those that you just mentioned, there are a dozen that we don't know about yet. They're out there. They are everywhere. They are everywhere. Hoarding is just rampant. It's everywhere. And, yeah, no kills driving it. I'm sorry. I know people don't like to hear that. But the no-kill philosophy is what created so many rescue hoarders in this country. They hide behind the words no-kill. Our shelters are overflowing. Rescues are packed. I have been trying to help a friend of mine move a beautiful setter mix mom and 8 puppies for a while, We were trying to move this mom before she whelped into a safe rescue. She wound up having her puppies at the kennel. Nobody wants these beautiful little puppies because they're all packed. You know, we're in a crisis. We have to really get out there and start getting our hands dirty with some spay-neuter, big time. We preach it all the time. Mm-hmm. The time's come where that has to be our focus. Our focus has got to be spay-neuter. I'm tired of these rescues grabbing up puppies, leaving mom behind to have more puppies. We see this all the time. They're getting them on Craigslist. They're getting them on Facebook. Oh, a litter of cute puppies. I'll go grab these. These are great for retail rescue. You know, we can flip these real fast. And they grab the puppies, and they leave that mom there to get pregnant and have more puppies. And I know I'm ranting, but it's just been ugly lately. And it's...
I know.
I feel hopeless.
I know. And
I feel hopeless.
Listen, we all feel that way, and we all get frustrated. I have another article, which I'm not going to wait to read while you're on, because I'm watching the time, and you just tell me, you know, you have to hang up. We've got two callers in the queue. We've got Lynn calling in from Colorado. Lynn, I know you can hear me. Just stay in the queue for me. But I've got another number here, folks, and I don't know who it is, so it might be directed towards Scotty. I don't know, but I'm going to take the call. So area code 336, you're on the air with Inspector Bark.
That would be me.
Oh, hi there. Okay, well, thank you very much. And who's me? I recognize. How are you, Gina?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. So Gina is on the line with us, and she is with Guard Dog USA. So Gina, just stay put for me, because Gina, Julie's got a bell on us, and I want to hear your input as well. But let's go ahead and give Julia a little bit more time here, and I'm going to go back to Scotty. I was hoping a call would come in and regarding Joey's legacy, but Scott, hang in there. If you can all go ahead and mute yourself, I'll pull in Lynn here in a little bit. But, Julia, go ahead and finish what you were saying. And you're right. It's sad. It's frustrating for these innocent animals.
And, you know, I'm also concerned about the donors. You know, people are throwing their money after these situations, really believing their hard-earned money is being put to good use. And it's being used to, like in my case, for the guy that I deal with, Randy Skaggs, he's going to concerts, he's buying booze, he's purchasing animals off Craigslist. He's currently loaded up on farm animals. We have video of him feeding these farm animals human cookies and highly salted popcorn and inappropriate food, and once again, Kentucky's doing nothing about it. You know, it's like they're just tired of hearing about the situation. So he's flagrantly breaking the laws and harboring these animals in unsafe conditions, and no one's doing anything about it. I don't know what the answer is. We have got to have some kind of monitoring, but then that begs, who does this monitoring? Who is going to do it? Who do we trust to do this? Right now we're self-policed, and it's not working.
And you've said that. You always have said that. And I know Gina will chime in here as well as Lynn. Scotty, I haven't forgotten about you. But you're right. We have to be the eyes and ears for these poor animals, because on a local level, if they're going to turn a blind eye and a deaf ear, who do you go to? Then you go to the state level, and the state level says it's a local level. The federal level, and let's talk about the federal level, which is the IRS. I say this over and over again. They are giving every Tom, Dick, and Harry an IRS 501c3 nonprofit status. Now you marry that with the words animal rescue, you got the biggest scam going among the general public, who are very naive and gullible. Let's face it. They are very naive.
Exactly.
They think these people walk on water. And when we do a deep dive,
you know, they write up these good
see,
stories. Yes, they.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good
and
stories,
you know what I did?
Websites, you know, mm-hmm. tear-jerking stories. Oh, let's get this money. You know, you mentioned earlier rescues having all these fundraisers for this particular animal, yet the foster of that animal can't even take them to the vet. You know, anybody fostering for me knows they don't have to get my permission. If there's a problem, get them to the vet. You know, call me on your way. Just go. You know, don't wait for me to tell you, oh, my God, you know, yes, you can go. If you've got a problem, get your butt to the vet. You know, I don't understand how they continue like this. I don't understand why they haven't been stopped. Why aren't more
people
speaking out?
Well, here's the issue. And the problem is, as you know, as Gina knows, Lynn's listening, Scott, no government entity wants to regulate these rescues, but it's the fault of the government, the IRS, who gives these 501c3 steps. They're the only ones that can revoke it. So in order to urge people to please fill out 3949-A, thank you, Julia, you told us that,
yes.
to fill it out. And
yes.
unfortunately, this is where we're going to talk, I'm going to touch on, the fact that people just are really, sadly, lazy. They're lazy, and that's Gina's subject. My dogs are going to bark. So, Julia, I'm going to mute myself. I can hear you.
Okay, yes. That's what we find. People all get outraged for a few minutes. They say that's a shame, but then they don't take any action past that. Form 3949A from the IRS is a very easy, quick-to-fill-out form. You don't have to put much in there. You just fill it out, fold it up, put it in an envelope, and pop it in the mail. You can't snail mail this one. You have to mail it in. This is really about the only weapon we have right now when it comes to trying to get these 501c3s stopped, these illegitimate ones. You have to report them as a person using a nonprofit to scam the public instead of reporting mm-hmm. them as a scammy nonprofit. It's a fine line, but they go to different places. We need more people speaking out. And here's another
yes.
issue that I have. Randy Skaggs scams a lot of senior citizens because he does his donation collecting through the U.S. mail. And I really urge everybody, if you have senior family members, pay attention to their mail because he's not the only one doing this. There's a lot of people out there that scam seniors through the United States mail. They send them these colorful little flyers. They draw them in with their little stories, and the next thing you know, they're writing them checks and putting them in their will. So pay attention to your senior family members' mail.
And they think that this money is going for a good cause for the animals, and we are
yeah.
seeing,
it's not.
In my
it's
opinion,
not.
In my, it's not. I, with my research and my investigation, of what I discover behind who's really operating this rescue, my conclusion is 80% of them are bad. I really feel that way. And now another person that does this as well, she thinks even higher, 90%. But it is really getting out of hand, and we've got to stop it. But when we have local agencies pointing the finger at, oh, well, it's not our agency, it's this one, it's this one. And this poor woman Scott was talking with yesterday and I was talking with, she got the runaround. Oh, well, you know, you have to call
oh,
this
yeah.
agency. Well, it's not our. Mm-hmm. Julia, you got two
yeah,
more minutes.
Road.
Is there, yes, you got two more minutes because I know you said 12:40, so I'm very sensitive to that. What else is it that you'd like to share in the last 2 minutes? And then I got to bring Scotty back on.
We can't rescue our way out of this crisis. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. We are overflowing in the shelters. We are overflowing in rescue. The public has been educated. We've done what we can to educate the public. They're just not getting it. So we're going to have to get out there and just start spaying and neutering. We're going to have to do it. I think
mm-hmm.
that's the only way
mm-hmm.
we're going to fix it.
I do want to share
this
article. I think
rescue has to evolve again.
Mm-hmm. And I know you have to hang up 1 minute to go, but this one is titled "The Deadly Consequences of No-Kill Policies." And let me just finish with this in 1 minute. Consider this parable about no-kill policies. You're walking next to a river, and you see a kitten floating past. You jump in, and you save the kitten. Then another one floats by, so you save that one too. Then another, and another, and another float by. And you soon realize that you can't save them all. So you run upstream to see who's throwing kittens into the water, and you stop that person. Thousands of unwanted, abandoned, neglected, and stray animals pour into animal shelters across the country every day, far outnumbering the good homes available to take them in. But instead of going upstream, instead of working to address the source of the problem, which is a runaway animal birth rate, people are being pressured into focusing on the symptoms. We can end the cycle of animal births, homelessness, and death, but we must address the root cause instead of flailing in the water, pulling out one kitten at a time while so many others float by, and screaming that others in the water with us aren't saving enough kittens. And the problem is we don't have enough good homes out there, people, for these needy dogs and cats. And that is what I've always said. And I just pulled this article out of my binder, and this is what this no-kill is creating. We have to stop
it
at the root of the problem.
It is. Well, listen, girl, I've got to run. I've got to hit the highway with this chubby dog. I got a chunky monkey here.
Good luck.
To go to the vet.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you, Julia, for all
you
do.
Have a great show.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you so much. Scott, you can unmute yourself. I'm going to bring in Lynn and say hello to Lynn Gerber from Colorado. She'll talk about what's happening in Colorado in just a few minutes. Good afternoon, Lynn. Actually, Lynn is 2 hours behind us, so it's still morning.
Yep.
Lynn, can
you
hear me? Yep. Okay, Lynn might mute herself. Unmute yourself, Lynn. So, Scott, wrapping it up, I was hoping that a caller was supposed to call in, maybe got detained or whatever. I don't want to tell you who it was. It was a surprise caller. But let's talk about a couple more minutes left, and then I've got to get Gina on here and Lynn. What can we do to help bring awareness to your cause?
You know what, Darcy? It's a situation where, and I was guilty of it back in the day also. You know, we went decades with dogs and cats and great veterinarians. You know, they went once a year for their, you know, shots and what have you. You know, I never really had a situation of any kind of negligence or malpractice. All of my pets passed due to natural causes, and then all of a sudden, bam, one day. And this is what you're going to find with a lot of people. When you say, do you know what veterinary malpractice is? They're going to look at you like you got, you know, five eyes in your head and like, what are you talking about? Nobody can really grasp a concept unless they become a victim themselves. It's kind of like until you walk in my shoes, that kind of a thing. And so what can you do? You just spread the word that it exists. We're here if people need us. We're available 12 plus hours a day. Sometimes I'm talking to people in London at 2 in the morning, our time here on the East Coast. We help people all over the world. We have veterinarians all over the world. They're all AVMA accredited. Some are professors. They teach at the university level. They've written research reports on various topics in veterinary medicine. And we have a very qualified group of professionals that have helped a lot of people with their, you know, with their allegations of malpractice and negligence. And, you know, to top it off, when there's fraud involved, which unfortunately happens about half the time, veterinarians that know they've done wrong won't hesitate to falsify records and to cover their negligence because they feel they exist in the environment of the vet boards who will protect them from harm. Well, maybe the vet boards will, and they usually do. But, you know, we're here to do part of the job that the vet boards won't do. We have to be the watchdog.
Right. Yes, you do. And we have to be the watchdog on our end. And before
right.
you hang up, Gina or Lynn, is there anything you'd like to ask or contribute to Scott and what he had to share with us? Either one of you.
No. I don't have anything
okay.
to add.
Okay. Lynn, are you there? She's got the number. It's right here. It's not disconnected. Well, Scott, you know what? I always appreciate talking to you. I love to compare notes with you. We share every now and then session, excuse my language. It's frustrating. It's aggravating. But we have to do it for the animals, and we have to keep on fighting. So thank you for all you do, Scott, and your team.
Absolutely. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Scott. So that was Scott Fine from Joey's Legacy. Again, the group page is Joey's Legacy Vet Male Victims. They also have a public page on Facebook called Joey's Legacy, Seeking Truth and Integrity in Veterinary Medicine. So at this time, I'd like to introduce my colleague, my friend, my true animal advocate, Gina Pitt, who helps run the page Guard Dog USA Exposing. And boy, do they expose the pet flippers, the bad rescues, the abusers, the breeders, et cetera. Gina, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Well, what is it that you would like to talk to the followers about and address any concerns or thoughts you have?
Laziness.
You don't say.
I think there's a bit of a delay.
You know,
as a networker for animals in need, you can't, if a rescue pops up and says, I'll take the dog or the cat, you can't be like, okay, great, and ship it off. You actually have to research the rescue. There are certain questions that I always ask. Do you do a home visit prior to adoption? Does your contract state the animal must come back to the rescue in the event that the adopter can no longer keep or no longer wants? And does the microchip stay in the rescue's name for life? That is very, very, very important because a lot of people move, change their phone numbers, and they do not update the microchips. There are animals in shelters every day of the week that the shelter calls, and the number's disconnected, the person no longer lives at that address. I've actually saved one like that myself. I had a feral cat trap set up in my yard because I was going to do some TNR in my neighborhood, and I called a black Pomeranian. He was microchipped. Luckily, the microchip went back to a county animal shelter, got in touch with them. They got me in touch with his adopter, who never responded. So if you network animals in need, you have to do your due diligence because that animal's life is in your hands before it ever goes to a rescue. If you make a bad decision, that affects that animal's life and possibly could cause that animal's death.
Yeah.
Let me give you a really good example. You're going to love this post that somebody shared with
me.
It's on a page.
Lynn, I know you're back in the queue. Lynn, I'm going to bring you in, but please just mute yourself while Gina's giving this presentation. Thanks. Okay. I'm sorry, Gina. I'm sorry.
Okay. This post just popped up in my news feed. It's from a page called North Carolina Dog Flippers, Abusers, Scammers, and Breeders. There is a rescue in Cofield, North Carolina, Hertford County. Their own words are on these screenshots. They do not spay neuter. That is the adopter's responsibility. If you adopt out a dog that is too young to be spay or neutered, that adopter should have a spay-neuter contract, period. That rescue, that adoption fee should include the price of spay-neuter, and that rescue should set that spay-neuter appointment up. That adopter doesn't keep that appointment. A good rescue goes and gets that dog. Okay? Older dogs that they take in or have been returned to them. Oh, they have a home for life. They won't readopt them out. But their home is a 10 by 10 kennel. And you know those big square plastic rain barrel things that people use to catch rainwater? That's their freaking house. That's their house.
Oh, God.
Direct sunlight, by the way, too. Okay. And they say that they, let's see, we do not have funds to just give people to get the dog fixed. As far as the older dogs, we do not adopt them out. We save them from kill list. They're pulling from shelters, brand new rescue, pulling from shelters. Or they're the ones that have been adopted out and people realize they can't take care of them. Therefore, we take them back and will not rehome them again. We do not want them to be passed from house to house. The older dogs we have are separated, so they will not get pregnant. So even when they get these older dogs back, they're not fixing them. That tells you their clientele right there. So my point is, if you are a networker and you ask the appropriate questions, you're going to bypass this rescue. You're going to give them a piece of your mind and tell them what proper rescue protocol is, and you're going to warn everybody about this rescue because this is not rescue. I mean, you know this is literally as well as I do.
Yep, but Gina, you know as well as I do, and this is what we have, the problem with whistleblowers. When they come out and they say, don't use such and such rescue, they come under fire. They get attacked. They get
Who cares? That's my thought. Who cares?
Oh, I'm with you.
If
I mean,
they're
I'm
scared
with you.
Of the backlash. Get out.
They are. And you're
get
so
out.
Right.
You have no business in animal community.
Well, they need to have a backbone, and they need broad shoulders
exactly.
And a big mouth to blow the whistle. Lynn, can
this
you hear
rescue
me now?
Even has a post from December 2022. It literally says free puppies. Okay? Free puppies.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
I mean, it's absolutely insane. And they are very new. Filing date, April 2023. The rescue owner, here's another red flag networker should look.
Do we have a determination letter at least? Did you guys look?
No. Here's another red flag that networkers need to look out for. This rescue in particular, and you see it a lot, it's very, very common. One of the rescue owners, it's a husband and wife team, has five to seven, it's all on this post, profile pictures. When you need more than one Facebook page, hello, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Big red flag.
We are seeing incompetent people that want to portray themselves as rescuers. And I really love this quote from Joe Montana, the famous football player. He's now at the age of 65, and his quote is, I have little patience for nonsense and insufficiency. And what bothers, and that's his quote, but what bothers me is the animals are the ones that are suffering. And what we're seeing also, and I don't know, Lynn, if you want to jump in here about what's going on in Colorado, we're seeing an uptake in more dangerous dog bites because these rogue rescues are lying to the general public and saying that particular dog is good with kids. We had an example here in Georgia where a dog, we believe, has been put down. The dog went from foster to foster, beautiful dog. The dog was resource guarding. The dog did not like men. The rescue got angry at the foster. Some of these rescuers are control freaks as well, among other things. Took the dog away to retaliate. The dog then went to another foster that had a man. Meanwhile, the foster really had her hands on what was good for the dog, what was not, give the dog to a family. It should be a single mom. No men. Went to a home with a man in the house. And now all of a sudden, the rescue saying, oh, the dog is got adopted, okay? And you never see the dog again. Or is it possible that that dog was put down? Put down because an inept person portraying themselves as a rescuer doesn't know what the hell they're doing. And I found out from the person that she lied to the next person, said, oh, this dog only had one foster. It went from one foster to another, okay? You're lying. They are lying to the general public, and we're seeing these animals suffer the ultimate price. And they put them down because they're troubled animals. And that's another thing we're seeing. You don't board dogs long-term, people, and you don't keep pulling other dogs when your other dog is sitting in a boarding facility manned just 12 hours a day. They're sitting there rotting away, and they develop psychological issues. And if you are one of those people that are hiding your dogs in a boarding facility and not networking or cross-posting, as Gina mentioned, you got to market these animals to find them a forever loving home. Letting them sit in a crate is not responsible rescuing. One thought, Gina. I just want to know if Lynn is on.
I am.
Her number. There you are. Well, you've been so quiet. How are you?
I'm well. Sunshiny.
So what is it?
Out here in Colorado.
Yes, all the way from Colorado. Thank you so much. What is it that you'd like to share with the group, Lynn? What's going on in the state of Colorado?
Well, a lot's happening in Colorado. As many of you know, Colorado's the leader in the nation on standards of care. So I really come with some bright news. My organization, I have several. I am the creator of Good Dog, Good Life, which you can follow our amazing stories on YouTube and also on Facebook. I have an organization that started as a nonprofit called CAB2, 2 are better than 1.org. And I have worked 5 years in legislation. I've sat on many boards, testified, and been part of our animal welfare. I'm an advocate. I'm not a person that has the science and an activist. I believe that advocacy is more negotiating and trying to take my personal feelings aside, because this can be very emotional and deal with facts. That's what I've learned over the years. So let me share a couple things that we've done in Colorado. We worked for 2 years to pass two pieces of legislation for standards of care. One now was enacted in May, and it's for warehousing of dogs. When dogs are bundled coming into Colorado, they are now with puppies, or however they come into Colorado, there is now a ruling where dogs are self-mutilating, spinning, are warehoused for long periods of time. There will be, if they're turned in or there's an investigation proven to be factual, they will have to be put on an improvement plan, and the dogs will be monitored. We have a few rescues that repeatedly warehouse animals. And right now in the state of Colorado, in 2021, we had 338 rescues and shelters. To date, 2022, on our last reporting numbers, we have 348 rescues and shelters. Of that, the top rescues and shelters, primarily bringing in puppies and adults from out of state, was 15,127 puppies and dogs coming from out of state when we're in a crisis right now. Many of these puppies are not being spayed and neutered. So the issues that we have in Colorado that are going to be addressed are spay and neuter and importation. So we're addressing warehousing, and we're also addressing disease control protocols of sick dogs coming into our state. So we have all the information available through the state of Colorado, which I can share at any point. I will be doing an interview next week with a news station in regards to what's happening with our shelters currently. And illustratively, I will just say one of our best shelters that we have a program. It's called Positive Pathways. And in my work in legislation, I've utilized that all, and we've developed a team of individuals that work strictly in rural Colorado and throughout the state of Colorado. We primarily focus only on shelter dogs, primarily pit bulls and rural dogs. Getting them placed, we've placed 30 dogs, mostly pit bulls, in the last year, and we are working to support dogs not going into the shelter. So our greatest need in Colorado is the support of the shelter and the small rescues. The people that are importing thousands of puppies and dogs, in many cases, are not spaying, neutering, and it's out of control here in Colorado. So, you know, anybody that does my standard, any more than 300 dogs, that's a lot of dogs. So that's just a number that our group has utilized. When people start getting into importing or dealing with more than 350 dogs or puppies, we start looking at that. So illustratively, the problems that we're having, I'll use Foothills. It's one of the shelters that I work with the most. They're my favorite. They work with five municipalities, and they doubled. So they had 635 dogs relinquished in 2021. And in 2022, they had 1,265 dogs relinquished. So we're out of control in Colorado. So in the state of Colorado, intakes to the municipal shelters was 92,000. And that excludes dogs transferred in from out of state. So as you can see, our numbers are out of control. We need to support, and I believe, our belief, my team's is in Colorado, we need to support our shelter dogs and our small rescues before we do the big numbered people. We've got an epidemic, and it's going to get worse. So that's my two cents. I'm always available to answer questions. I think I want to just say, Darcy, with all the doom and gloom, there's amazing things that are happening out there. There's amazing people like yourself that are doing amazing things. There's a lot of light in the darkness, a lot of really great things. And I would love for anyone on this call to follow our Good Dog, Good Life Facebook page, to look at my tab2.org. And any questions, we would love to help you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, and thank you all the way from Georgia to Colorado. Gina, is there something that you want to add to what Lynn had to say?
Sounds like they have an awesome organization, and I congratulate her, and very impressed with the good work that they're doing.
Thank you very much, Lynn.
As I'm impressed with your guys' work. We've all worked in conjunction on a lot of things, and we need to unite and work together one dog at a time, one rescue at a time, and expose through factual data and information. We need to have more people involved in that part of it, providing factual data. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much, and thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
So,
thank you.
Thank you so much. So, Gina, I do, when you say laziness, and I always tell my girls or friends, I'll say, you know, there's three L's I despise: liars, laziness, and litter bugs. I despise liars, I despise litter bugs, and I despise laziness. So I'm glad that you're discussing that. And it's so important, because we have to be the voice for these animals. And when they are called out on a social media platform, they can't even have a debate. You had a situation, we were just talking about it yesterday, Gina, where you were asking questions. They, and I say they, the ones that are in question about, are they really in it for the animals or for their own personal well-being? And you're going to remember this, Gina. We just talked about it yesterday, where Gina asked questions, and I love that. And everybody should be asking questions. You've got some of these Facebook pages that are run by these rogue rescues, and they say, hurry, please, please, we need this amount of dollars to get this dog treated. Well, where's the vet bill? Where's the guesstimate? They pull a number out of the hat, and these people play on their emotions. They know how to do it. They pull on your heartstrings, and people start pledging money, and then they say they pull the dog, and then a month later, you never see the dog again, okay? It's ridiculous. So you share that story where you were questioning a rescue and the comment she came back at you with.
Well, I asked my typical three questions that I have already stated. Does the contract state the animal must come back to the rescue if the adopter no longer wants or cannot keep? Does the microchip stay in the rescue's name for life? Do you do home visits prior to? This particular rescue was an out-of-state rescue that told me they adopt out all along the eastern seaboard, that they had fosters all over the United States. And so my question was, okay, say that you have a foster in Georgia and the adopter is actually in New York. When does the meet and greet come in? Or, you know, especially if they have other animals, because if somebody that is adopting and they have other animals, the animal that they're interested in adopting needs to meet their current animals. I mean, you just, you know, you just never assume that everything's going to go great. And, you know, I asked if there was a plan in place. You know, this dog goes from Georgia all the way to New York. Say this adopter has other animals and they don't get along with the one they wanted to adopt. What's the plan? Is there a foster in that location, you know, that could house the dog until it gets back, you know, back to the original foster or back to the rescue facility? And she said, well, we've just never had that problem. And I said, but that, you know, it could be a problem. You don't know. And anyway, we discussed a little bit more, and she said, I've never been questioned like this before. Your questions are starting to make me feel uncomfortable. And I said, well, the fact that you can't answer my questions makes me feel very uncomfortable. So I guess we're just going to call it a wash, and I'm going to move on and try to find another rescue.
Good for you. I received back an email. I'm not going to mention the name. And you know, I send out three emails, Friday, Monday, and Wednesday. And I got one back this morning, and I'm not going to mention the name. I'm going to protect their identity. And she wrote back to me. And, Gina, I want you to hear this. And, again, you know, I do an episode description. It goes out blind copy to almost 4,000 people and growing. So this person responded back to me. She goes, in every pursuit, you will find human greed, which leads to cruelty and suffering. I've been rescuing dogs since 1984 and was shocked when I first encountered people who claimed to be rescuers but we're just raising money for themselves. There's very little we can do about this. We just have to concentrate on helping the victims. She signed her name, and then she wrote Woof and Rescuing Street Dogs. I won't name whatever. And then she wrote back again and said, I might add that I never, ever asked anyone for money. I worked a full-time job, and that's how I got money to help the dogs. And then her name. But I am going to respectfully disagree, because the next email I got, Gina, is a woman that I was on a conference call with a week and a half ago, maybe. There are three of them. They're located in the Jacksonville area. And this one woman is a dynamo. And if you could see what she sent me after what I advised them to do, hour and a half call with these lovely women, and there were four of us total, my own time and dime, spending to help them do what they need to do to bring the local, state, or federal agencies in to do their job. guided them on what to do. This is Jacksonville, Florida, the Department of Ag, Secretary of State, federal level, IRS. And sure enough, she got back to me without naming names, and she writes, I am one of many who have previously volunteered as either an admin, foster, or provided transportation, donations, supplies for dogs and puppies for local rescue registered with the state of Florida as blank, blank. I'm not going to reveal that. She goes, I am not a lawyer. I have not functioned as a lawyer on my or anyone's behalf. I have received education as blank. And then in bold letters, she writes, I am a whistleblower. I believe that following city court ordinances and Florida statutes have been broken. These are not exclusive, and there may be additional ones that have been broken. But she now lists, you know, this is awesome. I'm going to share this with you, but I'm going to redact the her name. She mentions the Jacksonville Code of Ordinances. She mentions and states the Florida statutes, all are in part of chapters. She talks about being an administrative volunteer from June 2022 to October of 2022. Before that, she began fostering in May 24th of 2022. My statement is below, along with multiple discoveries and additional comments from other ADVID volunteers, former fosters, and potential victims of donation fraud. And I won't read the whole thing, but this is what I like to see when I spend my own time helping and guiding and suggesting where to go, what to file. She did it. This woman did it. And it is just so impressive. I always hate seeing where people say, somebody do something. I say, why aren't you that somebody? You somebody. Because as you mentioned, Gina, laziness. And it's true.
Absolutely, in that aspect as well. Whenever somebody comments, somebody do something, has anybody called, has anybody emailed? Yes, I have. And you need to do it too. The more calls and emails, the better. That's how changes are made. I don't know what's wrong with society anymore. I mean, used to, I could do a write-in email campaign, and I could get 100 or more emails sent out in a day by various people. Now it's like, oh, okay, well, you did it, so I'm done. Next. It's like everybody has ADD now or something. I don't know. It just blows my mind.
I know we deal with it. I know we see it and deal with it on a regular basis. I believe we live in a very self-centered environment, a very self-centered society. It's truly upsetting. We've got an area code 575 coming in, so let's go ahead and take that call. All right, hold on, please.
You too.
All right. Area code 575, you're on the air with Inspector Bark and Guard Dog USA. How can we help you?
It's Carla in Florida. It's just a New Mexico number.
Hi. Okay.
Hi.
How are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm good.
Thank you so much for calling.
Everyone right now. Yeah, of course. I think everyone's working right now, so I'm not, and so I thought I would join the call.
Well, I'm very proud of you. And do you want to share with the listeners and tell Gina, the admin from Guard Dog, how we connected? And I don't want to say anything. You probably heard what I just wrote, right? What I just read.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so do you want to go into more detail? It's up to you.
Sure. Long story short, my wife and I became first-time fosters for a local nonprofit rescue here in town, and we were given 13 dogs, one mom and 12 puppies. They were 5 days old, and again, we were first-time fosters, and we were given all of these animals, and pretty much that we were left alone. It was like pulling teeth, trying to get any kind of medical care for them or food. The mom was clearly sick and was having really bad diarrhea, and it kept getting put off because she was a flight risk. And eventually my wife and I, after about a month, were tired of it. And so we took the initiative and we had a vet come to our home and treat her. And lo and behold, she was sick and all the puppies were sick. And so that then was a whole month of having to treat 13 dogs plus our own dogs. We had three at the time because two of ours had passed away due to old age and cancer. But it's a really long story that can also be found on my Facebook page, on my wife's. We've made them public. But when we realized things were not as they seem and we began to question it, the relationship with this rescue owner deteriorated quickly. And at first, all I did was leave a review on their page, and it was a review stating exactly what happened, how she, coming from a foster's side, how I was treated, what they did or didn't do. So immediately I was then, you know, enemy number one, and I was blocked from everything. She threatened the legal, which is a common tactic that she uses with other people. It's first bullying. If that doesn't work, then it's it's an intimidation. If that doesn't work, then it's bullying with her, between herself and her followers, and then she threatened legal. She has no legal. But because you throw that word legal, everyone runs away and everyone hides. In this case, when she said this to my wife and I, we said, you go get that legal. We would love to meet your legal, because you know, we have plenty of proof, plenty of, you know, like, please, let's bring legal into this. Obviously, that didn't happen. She just used that to buy time. Meanwhile, we had two of the dogs left, the mom and one of the puppies. They were still claiming they were ours. However, we were the ones caring for them, paying for everything, the same as it had been. We were kind of in a standstill because, you know, they're telling everyone the dogs belong to them, but they're not coming and getting them. And then it hit a certain point where we said, you know what, even if they wanted to come get them, they're not getting these dogs back. There's no way. I mean, it's 100% neglect. We are caring for these dogs. So after I left the review, the rescue owner sent an NDA. It was through email by this attorney who claimed to be representing her. And the NDA, which from my understanding is something that you file before a situation, not after, but she basically wanted me to take down my review, not talk to anybody about the situation, and in return, they were going to give us several things that they had already promised, that they were already supposed to give us. So it was kind of a joke of a letter, and we were like, no, like, we're not going to stay silent. There is a problem here. When that happened is when we decided to get louder. And I actually made a public post, pinned it to my Facebook. I shared it everywhere. We started reaching out to people. We also, when we started reaching out, it's because, again, we were first-time fosters. We had no idea what our rights were, what the laws were. In mm-hmm. Florida, the laws are very, there's nothing there to protect us. Animals fall under property law, and there's no law for the situation. And so we were being met with a lot of, like, every time we would call animal control, they're like, it's a civil matter. You know, they kept wanting us to take her to small claims court, and that's not solving anything. So we contacted rescues out of town, and we actually got a lot of help there. Unfortunately, we contacted a larger local rescue in town, not knowing that they were actually this particular rescue's mentor. So when we reached out to them for help, their help was to in turn go back to this rogue rescue, give them all the information, and help them to basically cover it up. To gave them the ability to make everything that we were accusing them of look like a lie, look like we were lying, you know, being the best as she could be for the current fosters, you know, actually getting medical care, providing the spay and neuters, and the things that she was supposed to have been doing and wasn't, like, now all of a sudden she was doing it for a second, only for a second, because it just starts again. And One thing that we found with putting our story out there was we obviously received a lot of hate, a lot of hate and lies being spread about us. People who we had never met before coming on and saying just outrageous things that, you know, they weren't even there for the situation to put their two cents in, but because they believe what this person's telling them, they're on like a bullying spree. You know, we're going to bully you.
Right, and they attacked you. They're trying to discredit you. Just like when I started getting involved, and not to interrupt you, Carla, because what you're saying is so spot on. And we've got another caller, and they're in the queue. They can hear us. But, you know, they'll try and discredit those that are speaking the truth. And I see this and I hear this with whistleblowers like you, like Shannon, and like the other, you know, your team member. But I will tell you, they do that. And what they'll do is they'll try to alienate that person from talking to the person that's speaking the truth. So, for example, they'll say, well, you know, don't talk to Darcy Butkus. She's unhinged. She's crazy. She's, you know, Baker acted. I love how they throw this out. They made you shared it with me. I saw something recently on another one we're exposing down in Orange County, Florida, where I love this because you have to laugh at it because who believes this? And I was sharing it with Gina that I was naked in the middle of the night and I ran to the shelter naked and let all the dogs out. Who thinks of these things? These are evil people that will say that because they don't want you to reach out to the Darcy Butkuses or so-and-so from Jacksonville because they don't want you to know the real truth. So this other case that we put up on Inspector Bark, another young girl, dog flipper, Gina, I think I talked to you about that, 25 years old. She's been arrested 4 or 5 times since she's 18. She lives with her grandmother, flipping these dogs. And, of course, she's going to try and discredit everybody. And the main whistleblower who came to me, she also, same like you, Carla, she got beat up on social media, I mean, and just the constant trying to discredit. But they never hold themselves accountable. Hold that thought, Gina. Hold that thought, Carla. I want to bring in area code 954. I don't know who this is. Good afternoon to the Inspector Bark Show, area code 904. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Stephanie.
Oh, Stephanie.
Former admin for Hope for Pitt.
Yay. Okay. Well, you are so welcome on the show. And, Gina, this is the wonderful woman that I was just praising about, really did her homework. These three ladies spent an hour and a half. We did. Yep, you'll be proud. And this is a template for everybody in Florida, depending on where you are, a municipality, what this woman did. The three of us, plus me, there were four of us. Ladies, we were on the phone for an hour and a half, were we not?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead, Carla. If you don't mind, I'm going to let Stephanie. I'd like to hear a little bit, Stephanie. If you can introduce yourself, you've got the guard dog admin Gina on the phone. We've got listeners. Share your story.
Sure. So I'm just going to go ahead and give a heads up. I am fighting a migraine. The storm that's passing through the area is like really freaking my head out. But anywho, my name is Stephanie. I am a former admin for Hope for Pitts, a Jacksonville, Florida nonprofit. I use that term loosely, animal rescue here. I was introduced to them by a post that had come across my Facebook feed. And I started to foster for them first. I had a pregnant dog that had come in supposedly from a high-kill rural shelter named Millie. She came into my home on May 24th. I was told by the founder, Emily Grimsley, formerly Emily Painter, that they had money set aside for Millie to have a C-section if it was necessary, but Millie came in. She was in labor. That was a Friday, May 24th, 2022 was a Friday. By Monday, she went into labor. And ultimately, from May 24th, if you will, until May 24th through June 1st, actually. That entire week transformed into the most traumatic animal foster experience I had ever had. This was not my first time fostering. It was my first time fostering with them, but I apologize. Again, I go back to being told that there was money set aside for Millie to have a C-section. When she went into labor on Monday, she started about 11 o'clock. Her labor stalled about 3:30. I essentially told Emily, you know, let's go to the vet. We got to get her to the vet. This isn't normal. We finally go. Long story short, her personal rescue vet, as I was under the impression, told her that Millie needed a C-section, but we needed to go to the emergency vet. She goes to the emergency vet. On her way there, she's doing this live, oh, woe is me, this puppy's going to die, this dog's going to die, blah, blah, blah. Please send money. We're going to the ER for C-section. And they tell her that Millie needs a C-section, and Millie did not get a C-section. Instead, they probably quoted her approximately anywhere between $1,500 to $2,000 for the C-section, and I even offered to cover it because I did not want to see this dog that I was fostering die. But I was told, no, it's cool, we got it. And then the next week after that, I watched Millie slowly freaking die. I apologize. It still causes me to become very emotional. Because I lived through the whole thing, and my hands were tied. I trusted this woman and everything she said, because why wouldn't I? Why would I not trust this woman? Here's, you know, an animal rescue who's saving dogs from high kill shelters. That was their mission statement at that time. It has long since changed. But I had no reason at that time to not believe this woman. And probably by that Thursday, everything that was in my heart of hearts that was telling me red flag, pretty much fucking came true. Pardon my French, but it came true. They spent, the donors, I will never say the rescue paid, but the donors, they spent over $5,000 in saving Millie's life that week, and they absolutely did not have to do that. I really appreciate each and every one, but if she had just been honest from the get-go and told people that the C-section would have cost anywhere between $1,500 to $2,000, or even allowed me to pay for it and her pay me back, which I would learn later on was, you know, a whole other issue, Millie would not have had to suffer. She would not have had to go through all of that. But went through it, she did, at the lack of actions because of this founder and the rescue. Fast forward a couple weeks later, I've now convinced myself that, you know, I can either be a part of the problem or be a part of the solution. So I offered my services as an admin volunteer. I've trained and worked in the legal field for over 20 plus years, so details and organization and, you know, being on top of everything is very important to me. And I figured, okay, this is a small rescue. She's overwhelmed. You know, she's just got, it's her and one other admin. This would be great. I can help them make a difference. And within 2 weeks of giving my time over, I realized everything I feared as a foster was 100% true and 100% able to be proven later on. And so that point forward, I started working on gathering all the facts, gathering all the evidence that I could, and begin to make a plan to get out. Within a month, I had gauged the other admins' thoughts and concerns, and they were also on the same page as I. So we ended up having our own little separate Facebook group chat, and Lord knows, as admins, we probably had 20-25 open at any given time, because Emily and its other founder, her husband slash treasurer, Clint, never fully engaged in anything. They would take all the credit and all the accolades and do all these, you know, live videos, more Emily than Clint, but these live fundraising emergency situation videos, the actual legwork, no. She would like to say that she did. If anything, the only thing that she was doing on the back end was having different conversations with other people that did not align with what she was telling her admins to either do or the information that she was given, any of that. It was like having just so many conversations and not one of them made a lick of sense in what we were trying to accomplish as admin. We ran interference for fosters and adopters that were either looking for overdue vaccine records for vaccines that were done in the Florida heat in their front yard. Now, this is during my admin time. I've since learned from former admin that came in after me that she was doing them at nighttime and that she was using same syringes and syringes that fell on the ground and things of that nature. And so it only got worse after I left. But by October time frame, I had felt like I had enough that I could leave and start my plan of trying to follow the money. My plan was, okay, I've already had a conversation, you know, a side conversation with Clint about filing taxes, who's the accountant, just gathering information. And, of course, it's non-existent because he has no idea what's going on with the money because he's not really privy to it. Emily collected all the funds. I'm sure she told him, hey, we allowed a dog get adopted, or, oh, we paid for this, that, and the other, whatever, just passing in conversations. And so it was very clear that money management was and bookkeeping was not a priority for them, outside of medical care also not being a priority for the dogs, but I digress. So October comes, and I'm like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to follow the money. I'm going to wait until December when they're required to file their taxes as a nonprofit for their fiscal year. I'll send the request, or no, I'll go on the IRS website and look it up. And lo and behold, as I'm preparing to do all this in October, I learned the IRS doesn't require a detailed refund or detailed tax return, tax reporting, if it's less than $50,000. You just have to file a postcard. So that
sent
me reeling, because I was like, well, there goes that damn avenue. So now what do I do? So I was like, you know what? Okay, fine. I'm going to wait until Millie's anniversary, and I'm going to freaking blow my entire experience out the water. I'm going to go into details about how I had to sit there and watch this dog cry her eyes out when 7 out of the 11 dogs that she was pregnant with died. And I'd have to share how I watched her just freaking barely walk across the room to get water because Emily refused to do the bare basic care, which at the time, which was recommended by the vet, was to give her a C-section. You know, her uterus essentially started to decompose. That's what the last emergency vet said after she had to stay in the ER for 3 days for blood transfusions, that she needed now an emergency spay to save her life because her uterus was decomposing inside of her. It was necrotic. And we still had to wait 3 additional days for that to happen because Emily didn't want to pay them. She wanted to pay her.
Yeah, let me stop you right there, because I'm hearing this, and this is a similar situation that we hear among other people new to fostering, just like what, you know, Kayla said, her and Shannon. You don't know, and you rely heavily on that so-called rescuer because, let's face it, the general public is just very naive to this. And now you're new, you want to help the animals. Was there any time, Stephanie, that you said, I've got to pick this dog up and get her help? I mean, to see her die like that. And this is a situation that happened out in Texas, too, Canyon Lake. A couple months ago I did a podcast, and those poor fosters had their hands tied because the one foster didn't have the financial means, and she kept wanting to help these puppies. And that evil woman out in Canyon Lake, Texas, wrap it up in a towel, quote, unquote, we've got the proof, and just stick it in the freezer and will die a slow death. Who does that? We are walking among evil. So my question to you is, Stephanie, when you saw this, she just kept telling you, no, you couldn't do it?
So there was never a yes or no. So essentially that Monday when we were going through, like, her going, so we together, me, her, she had Millie in her vehicle, I had Millie's two living puppies at that time, the first two that had lived and survived. And we go to River City Vet Clinic, which is where I was under the impression that was the rescue's partnered vet. They tell her she needs a C-section, and I look at her, and I'm waiting for her to say, okay, that's great, let's do it. Instead, she's like, oh, we don't have the money for that. That's the first time I heard we don't have the money for that, after she had told me the day in my home in front of four other witnesses that they had money set aside for the C-section. So when I heard her say no, I said, hey, I will pay for it. Oh, no, 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 we'll just ask the donors. And, of course, I'm thinking nothing of that because that wasn't my focus. My focus was on the dog. I'm thinking, okay, maybe this founder, she's got something planned. I don't know. Let me worry about these puppies that now I have to bottle feed because she's got to take their mom to the emergency vet. So she went to the emergency vet that Monday by herself. Now, when they got discharged at like 9-something at night, the third living puppy was born, and she brought the third living puppy and Millie back to my home about 10 o'clock and just basically said, well, they gave her some Pitocin and she should be fine because she passed some dead puppies there, blah, blah, blah. But that wasn't the case because by Wednesday, Millie had two more deceased puppies. By Thursday, she had two more puppies. Like, she was popping dead puppies out like it was nobody's business. All of these puppies should have been removed in this C-section that she was denied. My husband, on that Wednesday, when I had to take Millie back, because I took Millie back to the ER every time after that, my husband said, can we just, like, kidnap the dog and, like, not send her back? And I told him, I said, I legally don't know the answer to that, but right now I got to make sure this dog is safe. My focus and attention was on transporting Millie to and from the vet clinics or ERs, because that's where she would go after the very first visit to the partnered, so-called partner vet. So I never officially asked, let me fucking just take this dog to my vet and deal with it like that. Again, my focus was on her, making sure she lived. Whenever I was transporting her to the emergency vet, Emily would be doing a live video asking for donations. Whenever
oh, of
I
course.
Was
of course.
At yeah,
well,
and whenever
right
I was
there.
At the vet.
Stephanie, I've got to stop you right there because we've got another caller on hold. They can still hear us in the queue because I really want to hear the story. Gina, is there anything you want to add at this moment? Because you're talking to an admin that loves pit bulls. And we all have our own special, you know, dog that we love, breed, what have you. Gina, is there something you want to add before I bring in the next caller?
Me personally, because there are so many rescues out there that'll say wait and we got to raise the money, I would have just went ahead and paid for it myself day one. And if they paid me back, great. If they didn't, that's what small claims court's for. I mean, hindsight's 20/20, but just, you know.
Right. And I will say, even though my focus was on the dog at the time, that thought did cross my mind. But, like, that Monday when she had done her first, oh, woe is me, please save this dog, she made me believe that there were a ton of donations that came in. So I thought every appointment after that was financially covered by the donors that had donated. So at that point, I'm not thinking at the money anymore because we made it through the first event, and so I didn't ask. Now, everything after that, medically-wise, I took care of because I learned, obviously, it took me a week to realize that this is some shady-ass bullshit and this woman is ridiculously crazy. But after that, I paid for her vaccines. I paid for her to be evaluated by a dog trainer. I paid for her to go to daycare. I paid for all the supplies. And I had originally told Emily early on, hey, I can afford this stuff. I will not seek reimbursement for it. But that did not give her permission to take advantage of my generosity. And that's exactly what she did.
And you're still referring to the dog, Millie.
Correct.
Okay.
This is coming from Carla. As a first-time foster, the reason why this has hit me so hard is because not everyone has the money to afford that. Like one of you ladies mentioned earlier with a woman who really wanted to help, but she didn't have the money. This rescue and others, they are chasing potentially amazing fosters and donors and supporters away. You know, again, killing and hurting dogs because not everyone can afford to do that. When my wife and I finally had enough with dealing with Emily, we said, you know what, we're going to call the vet and have the vet come here. And we paid for it. We paid for it all up front. We got some of it reimbursed, but not all. But we had the money. And like Stephanie just said, she took advantage of us. We were planning a wedding. We had just done a whole bunch of remodeling on our home. We had to refinance our house to pay for our wedding because these dogs cost us thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars when it was supposed to be free.
I know.
Have you taken them?
Go ahead, Gina.
I was asking, have they taken the rescue to small claims court to get your money reimbursed?
A lot of the people six other admin have left. Those of us that worked with those fosters and or adopters would have and have had conversations currently recently with these fosters and adopters, and they're scared of her because she – and we're slowly changing that fear over. I promise you on that. But here's a woman
that – Is
there
a post about Millie?
Tom?
That I can find. I'm not familiar with her story.
Yes.
I will send it to Inspector Bark, the link that goes to Millie's story.
One more thing,
Gina, I want to get this caller in. Gina, there's a page. We don't know who the admin is. I don't want to know who the admin is. Fabulous job. I'm reading something just now. It's called Hope for Pets, Stop the Madness. Hope for Pets, Stop the Madness. We've got to get that elevate it, and we need more people to come to that page. But I remember starting with Carla and Shannon, a couple months back, and it was just really the two of you fighting. And look how many people have come on board. And I applaud you, ladies. Hold on. Let's just bring in the next caller, area code 804. You're on the podcast with Inspector Bark.
Hey, how you doing? I didn't realize my wife was already talking to you, but it's Shannon.
Oh, hey, Shannon. How are you? You could hear us in the queue. You're not calling me baby. I think you're calling your wife that, right?
I was laughing. I was laughing the whole time. I was like, oh, damn, she beat me to it.
Well, I really have to say, and Gina from Guard Dog, these ladies were really relentless in getting the word out. And again, all three of these ladies, we were on a call. Shannon, you can attest to that. We were on a call a week and a half ago. But everything that I told these ladies to do, by golly, they did it. This Hope for Pets, Stop the Madness, we really got to get that out there. We've got to get it on other platforms. It's done very, very professionally, in my opinion. They're even looking, Gina, if you're in front of your computer, they're even apologizing to a Kat Johnson, this page, because she was close friends with Emily, and she finally took off her blinders, and they don't remove what they said about her. They amended it and apologized, and it takes a big person, whoever is running this page or whoever team, keep it up, don't let up. And this file that you created, Stephanie, I just am so proud of you and your people that are helping, and Carla and Shannon, and we've got to stick together in power and numbers, because they will try to divide us. They will do things as they try to do, trying to convince you, don't talk to Inspector Bark, don't talk to this person. We are the ones on the side of the animals, and these people are imposters. They are evil people.
They are.
Look, all I can say is, speaking for my wife and I, is we've invited her to take us to court multiple times. We want her to, frankly, you know, we have all the evidence to on our side to show that what we're saying is not lying, and what we're saying is not trying to scam people. And I literally have. I've tried to push every button I've been able to push to get her to take me to court so she can pay and I can just countersue. But, you know, she doesn't even have a lawyer. So, honestly, it's she has lawyer friends. She doesn't have a lawyer.
Well,
I have a quick...
Go ahead. Go ahead, Gina.
You said that Millie passed away, right?
No, Millie did not pass away. She was
away. Because I was like, oh, my God, why didn't they get this rescue for animal cruelty? Okay,
no.
All right, I was freaking out. I'm on the
Emily was slowly dying, but luckily at the kindness and generosity of donors to the rescue, her life was saved when she had an emergency spay on June 1st, 2022.
Okay, well, I just caught the part you said she was slowly dying, and I was like, oh, my God, why didn't somebody go grab this rescue lady by her
head?
No,
that really is,
pull her
to
the vet and say, pay now or we will. We're done.
I don't know if they've mentioned it already, but she did kill four puppies.
Dog died. And someone's personal dog.
Do you still have Millie? What happened to her?
I adopted Millie. I made sure when my husband and I finally started to talk about, because she was also heartworm positive during all of this. So when the time came and her puppies were fully weaned, he and I sat down and we were like, okay, well, you know, maybe Millie needs to move on to her new home so she can do her heartworm treatment. Our home's a little hectic, crazy. And he said, no, she needs to stay here because she will not do better anywhere else. And he absolutely was right. So we adopted Millie. I made sure that the adoption papers said that the rescue was going to pay for the heartworm medication, even though I know that they're supposed to. I had it in writing. And in addition to adopting Millie, we adopted her youngest daughter, the last surviving puppy that she had given birth to that Monday evening at the first ER visit.
Awesome. Thank you for doing that.
How is Millie doing today? She's a thriving, happy doggy.
Yes,
I can
May 18th.
That.
May 18th. She's actually on my bed. She just looked at me and she heard you guys calling her name. May 18th, I took her to our vet that we use for all of our animals and had her heartworm test that she was due, and she is heartworm negative. She is absolutely healthy. She is thriving in our home. I have three female pit bull mixes, and there are some, you know, little moments here and there, but ultimately everyone is happy and thriving in our home.
Okay, excellent. And let me get back to you, Stephanie. You said that Hope for Pits, which is this new buzzword now, that these rogue rescues, which is what I think they are, it's my opinion, my First Amendment right, freedom of speech, they're saying now, well, you must only use our vet. What was the name of the vet that she had taken Millie to?
Well, she never personally said that to me during my time as an admin or a foster. She just implied that this particular vet, local vet, River City Animal Hospital, was their partner vet. But I don't think that was the case at all, as we've learned just by behaviors and relationships since that time, that she burns a lot of bridges. She does not have a steady vet hospital that she uses. She just goes to the one that will give her the biggest discount. And Lord have mercy, if they don't give her a discount, she'll blast them all over the place.
It's their fault.
Recently, recently with the last final straw for me, before I even made it to Millie's anniversary to expose the rescue, they took in 27 puppies. 7 of them were parvo positive. They never saw a vet until it was too late, really. I learned since then that there was another rescue that actually, when those 7 puppies came into Hope for Pits on a Friday, another rescue reached out and said, let us take those puppies from you and help you. And
Emily and the clock care.
Right. And Emily and the representatives of Hope for Pits did not freaking do anything to make it happen. And so by Sunday, 4 of them were dead. And so, the ER the ER vet that they were using initially for those 4 puppies was Capital Vets Emergency Care here in Jacksonville. And when Capital Vets wasn't giving them a large enough discount after all the money that they paid to Capital Vets to save these dogs that they never should have taken in and or should have taken to the vet first to begin with, she blasted them on social media and said that basically they sucked. They were mean. They didn't help. They didn't care about the animals. And so she moved the 2 remaining puppies to a different ER, First Coast ER. And I was quite shocked when, after the 2 puppies that was with First Coast ER, once they got healthy enough, I was quite shocked that First Coast let them take the puppies without paying the $2,000 they owed on the bill.
$2,900.
Did you know their Facebook page is down, or either unblocked?
And
their Facebook is down.
Just to clarify also, she gave all those parvo puppies, parvo positive puppies that she would have known about, if she had actually taken them to the vet to get seen, she gave them the vaccine in her front yard.
With the same needle.
So, ladies, we've got 7 minutes because I see the timer. I want to address a couple things. So the rescue that we're talking about right now is Hope for Pits. They're located out of Jacksonville. The girl's name is Emily. It used to be Emily Panter, right, Painter? And then now it's Emily
Painter.
What?
Grimsley.
Okay. Grimsley. And her husband just so happens to be on the board as well, and that's what we're seeing, more and more of these fly-by-nights starting up their so-called rescue. You'll see the board of directors, which they submit to the IRS, are family members. Well, if the IRS is giving them a 501c3 status, they're not even looking at their requirements, because you have to have 3 board members, unrelated, okay? Shannon and Carla, you're married, okay? That's 2. You got to go to 5. So now we've got the husband, Emily. How many other board members have you looked at? If you haven't, Stephanie, you probably know this
They're
answer.
Her best friends.
So
there's only
okay,
so and I wouldn't I wouldn't Shannon I wouldn't I you can't say that they're best friends if they've only known
right.
each other in the last few years.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
in
yeah,
my opinion,
I've got
that's how Emily talks about her.
Right.
But of course,
okay,
I was her best friend, and I only met her in May. So you know.
And a lot of these people and you know, I know Gina does this. Deep dive into their backgrounds. A lot of these.
Well, I'm on Guidestar right now, and I'm showing the ruling year is 22, so they're a new rescue.
They've been operating and taking in donations since 2021, but they've only had their letter of solicitation since when, Stephanie?
Okay, so I'm going to I'm going to take over the admin part of this question. So they filed their IRS 501 status with the IRS December 27th, 2021. They received their confirmation from the IRS in March of 2022, backdating to their application date. June 2022 is when the state of Florida granted them their certificate to solicit for donations. I pulled up their Venmo history because luckily Venmo will show that history for businesses and nonprofits donations made, and they were collecting donations as far back as January 2021. When you go to her Hope for Pitts or personal Instagram account, she was collecting and soliciting donations or supplies or fosters or adopters as far back as 2020.
Well said. Well said. And we got 4 minutes before we end the show and the recording stops. So what I want to jump in here is that we see a lot of the same characteristics and the similarities with these fake rescues, which is what I think, in my opinion, Hope for Pitts is. These people are, in my opinion, bottom feeders. They are bad citizens. What we're seeing is arrests, criminal infractions, multiple judgments and foreclosures and liens. I mean, how does the IRS give this individual the status quo nonprofit organization? Because the general public, again, they fall for that. Oh, well, they got to be good. They're a nonprofit. No, they're not. And I blame and point my finger at the federal agency, the IRS, who's giving them the status. And when I write a complaint, I do it with a cover letter, and I say, please alert your charities and nonprofit division of the IRS to stop giving them out like jelly beans. We will do a complaint, and we were sending the complaint directly to the charities and nonprofit division. Guess what? You fill it out. You fill out the EIN number. It's a very simple form. You send it. And if you want a response back, they send you a letter in the mail, ladies, 4 or 5 months later. They don't say, here you go, Mrs. Butkus, in reference to Hope for Pitts EIN number, blah, blah, blah. No, it's a generic letter. They punch out of their printer, and it's the same letter. And then a week later, you get another complaint, and it's the same letter matching that letter. You don't know who it's in regards to. So if I send out 10 complaints over a period of, let's say, a month, it's the same letter. So this is what they say. This is your last correspondence. You will not hear from us. And it's an easy way for the government agency to say, let them think what they want. And you know what? It probably gets thrown in the trash, but we're going to keep trying, and we've got to. And with that, we've got less than a minute and a half. In closing, you three women are rock stars. Stephanie, I've got your number listed here. I took notes on your email. I applaud you. Gina, I don't know what you want to say. I got 90 seconds. Gina, what would you like to say to these fine, wonderful whistleblowers?
Thank you for doing it and not being lazy and not being scared and not running. As long as you have the truth on your side, put it out there. Don't ever back down. You're doing a great job.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are. Truth is the absolute defense. I love saying that all the time because it is. And on my business card, the famous quote, 1 minute left, the famous quote from Mark Twain, if you tell the truth, you don't have to remember anything. Keep on fighting the fight. Everybody listening, you are not alone. Join forces. Help us be the voice for these animals. They need us. And to the three of you on this podcast, thank you so much. Thank you for calling. We're going to sign off here in 30 seconds. Gina from Guard Dog, thank you for all you do and your team. Thank you, thank you. And Scott Fine from Joey's Legacy Veterinarian Malpractice. We will continue, and if we need to discuss this again on the next podcast, we will. Thank you all. Ladies, thank you. Gina, thank you. We've got 10 seconds left.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Thank you. I do have a thing listed. Oh, shit.
It's okay. It's okay.
I do have
a
petition that I've made to try and actually get some laws instated specific to rescues.
Hold that thought. Don't hang up anybody. I'm going to move us into a chat room. Hold on, okay? Just stand by.